from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to this program. We have a lot to share today. A lot on health and healing, a lot of environmental issues. Plus, we have a lot on commentaries. So let's begin. First up, Manuka oil conquers deadly MRSA bacteria where conventional medicine fails. I'll quote from you from Caroline Wright from Wake Up World. She says, with life-threatening instances of methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus infections on the rise, many are seeking safe and effective alternatives in the realm of natural medicine. Manuka oil is a shining example. Reports of healing attributed to this oil are becoming more and more commonplace, oftentimes in cases where patients had suffered from MRSA boils, lesions, open wounds that did not respond to antibiotic treatment. Well, that's good. Now, we know from this program, and I discussed this last week, that Manuka and the Manuka oil comes from the leaves and branches of the Manuka tree, which is native to New Zealand. It's an essential oil, but not only does it conquer deadly bacterial infection, it also helps with a lot of other conditions, including eczema. And the native healers in New Zealand have used it for a long time for a wide variety of infections. Now, traditionally, staph infections have been treated with methicillin, but now it's not working. We've used too many antibiotics over the decades. Bacteria are adapting and hence are resistant. MRSA is just one of those frequently antibacterial resistant from penicillins. This creates a dangerous situation as the infection can easily range across the body and then it compromises the immune systems. Now, the MRSA bacteria can migrate from the skin to the muscles, to the bones, and then unfortunately to the heart and the brain. And then that increases your risk of death. But we're hearing more and more stories. I reported last week about Gaia Health article, Manuka Honey and Oil, Antibiotic Action So Powerful It Beats MRSA. And here's what I believe the scientific literature can more than support when you use the Manuka oil. It can indeed help with fungal infections, inflammation, asthma, stings, allergies, rashes, sores, burns, even dandruff. So all good and none of it toxic. Studies at Sun Yat-sen University on diet and nutrition. Now, this is important because this was published in NewsRx.com, which is a mainstream pharmaceutical publication. And here's what it says, that new research on diet and nutrition from the scientists quote that the N3 polyunsaturated fatty acids have been shown to inhibit the induction and progression of many kinds of tumor and to increase the therapeutic effect of numerous chemotherapeutic agents, but they have very strong anti-cancer effects on cancer stem cells from colorectal cancer and other cancers as well. So once again, what are we talking about? We're talking about fatty acids. We're talking about the oils, simple things that we can put into our diet that can make a difference. My suggestion, that we include either a tablespoon of coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and olive oil. Actually, ideally, all three each day. But there's another reason to use the fish oil or the flaxseed oil from vegan sources like walnuts or flaxseed. According to the American Journal of Physiology, Regulatory and Integrative and Complementary Physiology, this was a double-blind trial which found a reduction in the response to mental stress in men and women given fish oil. Quote, despite the well-documented link between mental stress and cardiovascular disease, no study has examined neurocardiovascular reactivity to mental stress after fish oil supplementation. By the way, this was done at Michigan Technological University. The study included 67 non-hypertensive men and women, average age 24 years old. They were divided into groups receiving 9 grams, that's 9,000 milligrams of fish oil, or 9 grams of olive oil for 8 weeks. And before and after the treatment period, the subjects underwent assessment, resting heart rate, blood pressure, muscle sympathetic nerve activity, forearm and calf blood flow. And what they found was this, quote, "Overall, the data support and extend the growing evidence that fish oil has positive health benefits regarding neural cardiovascular control in humans and suggest important physiological interactions between fish oil and psychological stress that may contribute to disease etiology," end quote. So that means, in just lay language, that they were able to help the whole body, that fish oil could help protect your cardiovascular system during stress, and that's important. It could help prevent a heart attack. It could also help the brain as well. Remember, something like black cumin seed oil, which I believe is the best of the best, it's the top oil. It dwarfs any other oil. That can help turn off inflammation in the brain, and that's why I'm working with people right now as we speak who have multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and they're all taking black cumin seed oil, organic black cumin seed oil, 3 times a day. And I'm seeing some very positive results. In fact, so positive that at the end of 1 month, I intend to invite some of the people on the program to share their experiences with us. Cinnamon has potential ability to prevent Alzheimer's. Now, this is published in the peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, and this was reported in Science Daily. Here's what it says, quote, "Cinnamon, can the red-brown spice with the unmistakable fragrance and variety of uses offer an important benefit? The common baking spice might hold the key to delaying the onset or warding off the effects of Alzheimer's disease." According to Dr. George Engrave, scientist at University of California, Santa Barbara, the results of their study show this. And then it goes on to talk about this. Now, here's why I believe it's so important and why it was easy to prove this. And they're with the Department of Molecular and Cellular and Developmental Biology. When we talk about ORAC, which is a measurement of the antioxidant capacity to absorb oxygen molecules, what we're really talking about is how many free radicals can be attached and neutralized before they hit your cell and damage your cell. Well, cinnamon has to be at the top of the list. And therefore, cinnamon is protecting the brain of everyone who consumes it. So therefore, the more cinnamon you consume, the more protected your brain cells and your heart cells and other cells in the body are. And that's why I believe we should be consuming cinnamon on a regular basis. And diabetics, cinnamon oil. Very important. It was 10 years ago that I had heard from a physician from India who came by the office. He was here for 3 months. He wanted to see what was being done with some people in a particular study. It was a high blood pressure study. And I invited him to come to each class, as I do physicians who want to see how this is done on lifestyle. And afterwards we were talking, and he said in India it's common for them to use an oil to help people with diabetes. So I started researching it. And sure enough, I started seeing all this tremendous benefit. I started to talk about it. And lo and behold, after I talk about it, whether it was coincidental or causal, cinnamon oil started to appear in little capsules on the market. And this cinnamon oil, about 3 or 4 capsules, or little capsules of the actual oil, taken right after a meal, can have an impact upon not having the blood sugar spike. What a great way to help maintain a normal blood sugar. But also, aside from maintaining blood sugar, It also has these phenomenal amounts of antioxidants, so it can help slow down the aging process and oxidative stress project. And it tastes good, too. So anyhow, that's why the cinnamon was working. They didn't know why it was working, but I do, and I'm sharing that with you. And one more on the brain. Some new research published in the Journal of Human Molecular Genetics, researchers at Tel Aviv University show that phosphatidylserine, or better known as PS, which is a compound occurring in soy, could be a benefit to people with familial problems of the brain disorders. So that's important. Generally, 200 to 300 milligrams a day is more than enough. And one final thing, they looked at the Canadian Association of Neuroscience, published an article that showed that addiction to unhealthy foods is universal. And they said, quote, "The food addiction hypothesis suggests one could be addicted to food just as one is addicted to drugs of abuse. To test this hypothesis, Dr. Larry studies the response in our clinical setting of foods containing unusually high concentration of sugar, fats, and taste enhancers, such as high fructose corn syrup found in cookies. Increased availability of such high palatable foods could partly explain the high incidence of obesity around the world. But simple availability does not explain why some people are obese and others are not, given the same amount of available food. They suggest one important factor could be individual differences in vulnerability to addiction. Quote, we have evidence in laboratory settings of a shared vulnerability to develop preferences for sweet foods and for cocaine. And hence, some foods actually act like cocaine in the body. They become addictive foods, and hence can impact our body and our brains. Well, what do we know? We know that about 1.4 billion people were classified as overweight. 500 million were considered excessively overweight or obese. And it's only increasing. And with that, heart disease and diabetes. And I believe it's a combination of three factors. I believe it's a combination of a lack of living, raw, and healthy foods, such as fruits and vegetables and juices and grains and legumes and tubers. Because once you eat these, they satisfy the satiety mechanism in the body, meaning you don't feel hungry. And then also we're looking at when you have a great deal of protein, the body tries to rebalance this at the mineral level especially. And then you start craving something as a balance, and that would be a sweet. And then once you start eating the sweets, you realize that the sweets can make you temporarily have a little bit of energy. Yes, you're getting a blood sugar surge. But also, they become addictive. And they can alter your brain chemistry. And that's why people then keep going back and back and back to those sweet foods. Now, to test this, I took a group of people, 500 people, and all of them were obese and had been obese for at least 3 years, and they had a myriad of physical conditions. And we had them keep a diary, daily diary, put them all on a healthy diet, but then we broke them into groups of giving up their addictive foods gradually, one per week, like sugar week one, dairy week two, caffeine week three, fried foods, week four, artificial sweeteners, week five, etc., or giving them up all at once. And what we found was that when we gave all the foods all up at once, people went through withdrawal, much like a drug addict goes through withdrawal. And hence, we had to compensate by rebalancing the body biochemistry with lots of juices and rest and hydration and exercise to help expel the body toxins. It generally took 5 days to clear the body of the strongest impact of the addictive foods. Now, then the people were free and clear of those foods. They had more energy. They woke up earlier. They stayed asleep longer. They didn't have the digestive problems of bloating, gas, distension, constipation. They found remarkable benefit in just about the seventh day. Whereas the people were giving up one bad food per week, it took them much longer to get to that same place. It generally took them about 5 months to get to where they really felt they were on the good side of feeling good all the time. And that's why I believe that there are times when we have to go through really structured detoxification and cleanse and just get rid of this stuff and realize that, yes, the body will go through some adjustments, but that's when you want to be able to rest and sleep. So you want to do it when you're on vacation time. But once it's out and you feel so good, then you can do a challenge. And the challenge is on the seventh day, take something that you would normally have eaten before and eat it. And almost always you feel sick. If it's meat, you feel sick. Why? Because the body is purged and broke the addiction cycle, and now you reintroduce it, and the body has lost its homeostasis. So that's why when you get people clean, more often than not, they'll realize the advantage of staying clean and healthy. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Lots more to share. Let me give you one last one because it is very important for those who are looking for optimal amounts of vitamin C intravenous. There's new research studies that they're doing now showing how much intravenous or IV vitamin C could be used to help with cancer. And I don't think they have any clue in the world, but I'll put it out there and I'll put a paper I wrote out there that they're going to have to gradually work up to about 200,000 milligrams to really see the differences. If they stop at 50, 75 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams, which to them will be very high, they won't get the results. There's a threshold you have to go through. Then you start seeing the results, and then the results are terrific. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. The sugar is fine. I feel nice, the sugar is fine. So nice, so nice, I got it here. When I hold you in my arms.
Nice to have you with us today. For those of you who are listening over the telephone, which many of you are, and it's growing every number. You can listen to this program at any time by calling from anywhere in the United States and Canada, 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869, of some 4,000 to 5,000 different stations and groups using it. This is the number one listened to program. In fact, we're number two in the entire world on the telephone, so we get a lot of people who are listening. Also, people are listening on iTunes, on TuneIn, on PRN.fm, on Stitcher. So we get a lot of places to learn and listen. Now, for those of you who have not heard, tomorrow is a big day. It's the day when we're having 400 demonstrations around the world. And we have posted the information that you need, so you'll know where to go in your area. But we want everyone to be able to watch the documentary, Seeds of Death, so that you'll have what you need in the way of insights and information. Very important. So this way, you'll be able to address the issues of genetically modified foods and Monsanto and the arguments. Plus, there's an article that goes with it. In just a matter of minutes, we had 10,000 people watch the film. So the numbers are going up, but share it with other people. We need to make this viral. We need to have everyone in the world who's interested in the quality and health of their foods and taking back food sovereignty for the people. So we have a right to buy organic, and we want our food labeled. But it's only going to happen when we demonstrate. So get out and demonstrate tomorrow. But today, tonight, watch the film. The film is up there. And if you can go to Gary and All TV, you can go to Gary and All Facebook, you can go to Progressive Radio Network. We have it in many different places. There's seven different places to watch it. So that's important. Now, let me go over some things I'm concerned about involving Monsanto. This is from Lance Devon from Psychological Sciences. New study reveals how glyphosate in Monsanto's Roundup inhibits natural detoxification in human cells. Quote, the modern age of industrial agriculture and manufacturing has dumped heavy metals and carcinogens and plastics and pesticides into the environment at alarming rates. These toxins are showing up in most human tissue cells today. One distinct chemical may be trapping these toxins in this sinister chemical is glyphosate, and that's adversely affecting the body's ability to detoxify its own cells. In a peer-reviewed study, glyphosate has been proven to inhibit the human body's and cells' ability to detoxify altogether. Glyphosate, found in Monsanto's Roundup, is being deemed by publishers of the new study, quote, one of the most dangerous chemicals, end quote, being unleashed on the environment today. Well, how does glyphosate destroy human cells? Glyphosate, most commonly found in conventional sugar, corn, soy, and wheat products, throws off cytochrome P450 gene pathway, inhibiting enzyme production in the body. And this cytochrome 450 and enzymes play a crucial role in detoxifying xenobiotics, which include drugs, carcinogens, and pesticides. So by inhibiting this natural detoxification process, glyphosate systematically enhances the damaging effects of other environmental toxins that get in the body. This, in turn, disrupts homeostasis, increases inflammation, and leads to a slow deconstruction of the cellular system. Toxins build up in the gut over time and break down through the intestinal walls, infiltrating the blood and ultimately passing through the blood-brain barrier, damaging your brain. That's how it gets done. That's one of the reasons why the body's constantly detoxifying, and that system should never be interfered with. Adding to this, this is from Natural Society, Elizabeth Renter, and it says, did you hear about the 800 esteemed scientists who came together and demanded the production of genetically modified crops and products be stopped? Scientists who called on world powers to reevaluate the future of agriculture and seek sustainability rather than corporate profits. Well, don't be surprised if you haven't heard about this, as the mainstream media won't touch this one. 800 scientists did make such a demand. They made it first over a decade ago, and they have updated it over the years, adding signatures and releasing new information. Still, global powers have all but ignored their calls. The Institute of Science in Society is a nonprofit that dedicated to bringing an end to what they refer to as the dangerous GMO experiment. In an open letter to the world, they have highlighted why governments need to stop genetically modified crops now, before they are irreversible in their effects on the health of the people and the health of the planet. Quote, the open letter from world scientists to all governments calls for the immediate suspension of all environmental releases of GMO crops and products, both commercially and in open field trials, for at least 5 years. They also want patents on organisms, cell lines, and living things revoked and banned. That's a good thing. And then they're speaking out. Good for them. But you wouldn't know it by listening or watching MSNBC or Fox or CNN. So that's That's a serious thing. Now, yesterday, the Senate rejected the vote 71-27, an amendment by Senator Bernie Sanders to let states require labels on foods or beverages made with genetically modified ingredients. Quote, the overwhelming majority of Americans favor GMO labeling, but virtually all the major biotech and food corporations in the country oppose it. Today's vote is a step forward on an important issue that we are going to continue to work on. The people of Vermont and the people of America have a right to know what's in the food that they eat, end quote. Well, so what does this tell us? It means that the majority in the Senate are Democrats, and it means that they overwhelmingly controlled the vote. 71 said no. We do not want the states to have the right to genetically engineered foods labeled. Those are people pimping for corporate America. And yet, the good Democrats will go right out there and vote for them, irrespective of what these people have done. Another issue, this is from Daisy Luther, Activist Post, mysterious deaths in Alabama. Could they be related to Monsanto's BT cotton crop salt? This is short. RT, which is Russian television, reported Wednesday on a bizarre spate of respiratory illnesses in Alabama, two resulting in death. A mysterious respiratory illness has claimed the lives of two people in southeast Alabama and caused five others hospitalizations. The illness has left health officials baffled, who have no idea what this disease is or where it originated. And while the cause is currently unknown, it's interesting to note that southeastern Alabama's cotton fields are in full bloom this time of year, and that some of these crops are BT cotton. BT cotton is a genetically modified cotton that contains a particular bacillus, and that's a pesticide within the plant. Now, there's no proof that this is related to the mysterious illness in Alabama. However, history shows us that serious illnesses occurred in India, wherever BT cotton was grown. And when Monsanto's cotton was planted in India, two stories were presented. The Institute of Responsible Technology reported workers exposed to BT cotton developed allergies in six villages, and laborers required hospitalizations. And then a separate story, sheep died after grazing in BT cotton fields. After the cotton harvest in parts of India, sheep herds graze continuously on BT cotton plants. And reports from four villages revealed that about 25% of the sheep died within a week of eating the cotton. And most of the post-mortem studies suggest a toxic reaction. So it's something to consider. And since we have people listening right now from Alabama, you should pass this information along. And finally, on genetic engineering, Monsanto found guilty of chemical poisoning in a landmark case. A French farmer who can no longer perform his routine farming duties because of permanent pesticide injuries has had his day in court, literally, and the perpetrator of his injuries found guilty of chemical poisoning. The French court in Lyon ruled that Monsanto's Laso weed killer formula, which contains the active ingredient Alachocor, caused Paul Francosis to develop lifelong neurological damage that manifests in persistent memory loss, headaches, and stuttering. Reports indicate the 47-year-old farmer sued Monsanto back in 2004 after inhaling the Laso product while cleaning his sprayer tank equipment. Not long after, he began experiencing lasting symptoms that prevented him from working, which he says directly were linked to exposure to the chemical. And since Lasso's packaging did not bear adequate warnings about the dangers of exposure, that was, to him, one of the reasons that he didn't fear using it. He alleged at the time that Monsanto was essentially negligent in providing adequate protection for its customers. To the surprise of many, the French court agreed with the claims and evidence presented before it, declaring earlier that, quote, Monsanto is responsible for Paul Francosis suffering after he inhaled the Laso product and must entirely compensate him, end quote. Now the court is seeking expert opinion on how to gauge the losses in order to determine precisely how much Monsanto will be required to compensate him in the case. Quote, "It is a historic decision so far as it is the first time that a pesticide maker is found guilty of such poisoning." And that is a lawyer who was looking at that. So, let's see if that opens up any floodgates for those who have also been harmed and what they have to say about it. I'm Gary Knoll. In a moment, our guest. Please stay with us. Let us now go out to Washington, D.C., where Susan Levin, the Director of Nutrition Education for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, which is headed by Dr. Neil Barnard in Washington, D.C., devoted to promoting preventative medicine and better nutrition, is standing by. Susan has a master's degree in nutrition from Bastyr University. She's a registered dietitian specializing in sports nutrition, and she is counseled in diabetes. She's also conducted clinical work with the Swedish Medical Center and has taught at Peking University Health Science Center in Beijing. And the website is pcrm.org. Nice to have you with us today, Susan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Susan, right now, dairy is the number one source for saturated fat in the average American diet. So it is certainly associated with some of the poor health conditions in adults and children. We're seeing an epidemic rise in its use. And I would like for you to give us your perspective on why you're concerned about the dairy, the quality of the dairy that we're consuming, the amount of dairy we're consuming in adults and children and senior citizens, and take any part of it from hormonal changes with aging to the so-called quality of how dairy products are made. And in that respect, this morning, I was looking at some video of how hot dogs are made and then how different drinks are made. And it showed a cola with 1 year gone. They put an egg in there, and the cola dissolved the egg shell but did not dissolve the egg. And then you see what's in these products. But we never associate that. You would never eat a hot dog if you saw step by step how they're actually made. This mass of chemicals and artificial flavor enhancers and coloring agents. And by putting in pork and beef and chicken, mixing it all together, all the steps it goes through, it just is so ugly to see. And yet, people never see that. Well, people never see how dairy farms are maintained, especially commercial farms. Take us through all this. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Sure. Well, yeah, I think there's some very broad issues and then some pretty specific issues. And broadly speaking, I do like, because I don't recommend the consumption of any dairy products, and I take that back to kind of watching over all of the species on this planet and how they act and what they do, and no species drinks his or her mother's milk after weaning. It just doesn't happen because they don't need it. They know they don't need it. So once they are strong enough to live with just consuming food products, they don't need mother's milk anymore. But for some reason, our species has decided that not only are we going to keep consuming milk, we're going to turn to a completely different species to get it. And it's no wonder that we have so many problems. Milk is made ideally for a baby to grow very quickly, for a cow specifically to stand on his or her four legs and be as independent as possible, as quickly as possible. So this is a product that makes everything grow very rapidly, and it's no wonder it's so closely linked to some forms of cancer, and it's no wonder that it makes our hormones go out of control and makes us heavy. So I don't think there's, you know, any biological reason to be turning to this, to any mother's milk, when we don't need it. And I think there are actually consequences to that. So that's one area. And because you touched upon, if you could see what happens, that's right. If you looked at the way dairy cows, the way they, you know, get the milk out of dairy cows by keeping them perpetually impregnated, of course artificially impregnated, and then that calf never gets to bond with the mother, and we humans take that milk for ourselves, and it's not pretty. It's done with very high-tech equipment that might be efficient, but it's not very comfortable, and it's certainly not very sanitary, I don't think. I mean, the result is that we add all these antibiotics and other chemicals to the milk to make it safe. And then it's not even really what milk is at all. Every agency will recommend that we drink, of course, pasteurized and homogenized and low fat. I mean, all these things, this is just not what milk is. Milk is not meant to be homogenized. It's meant to be separated, and it's not meant to be low fat. It's meant to be very fatty to help these baby calves grow. So it's not even really milk that we're drinking. It's some sort of processed beverage that that we've forced it to be to make it even slightly healthy, quote-unquote healthy. So those are kind of two very broad issues, and I could certainly get into more specifics.
Yeah, do so. This is your chance to make your case against dairy.
Okay. Well, I like that you mentioned that this dairy products are the number one source of saturated fat in an American's diet. That's completely true and well documented. But I think people don't really make that connection about how fatty these products are, even if you do choose low-fat milk, as the government recommends one do, if one chooses to consume milk. You're probably eating other products like cheese that is not low fat at all. In fact, is on average about 70% fat, which is way too much fat, and it's also very high. It is saturated fat, the bad, quote unquote, bad fat, and then it's also very high in sodium and cholesterol. So we're getting all of these products, all these components that we need to be consuming a lot less of. But what you don't get is you don't get the government's nutrition recommendations telling you consume less cheese or consume fewer dairy products. In fact, they do quite the opposite. They're very keen to promote dairy products, and you know there are reasons for that. The USDA makes our nutrition recommendations, but the USDA was created to actually support agriculture way before it was asked to make nutrition recommendations. So you can imagine the conflicts of interest within that agency trying to support agriculture while making nutrition recommendations. So even though they'll say, hey, this is the number one source of saturated fat, they turn around and, oh, we should be consuming more dairy products, and all sorts of conflicts of interest there, and it's no wonder the consumer is completely confused, and no wonder the average American consumes about 35 pounds of cheese every year. Every person on average, and I don't consume any, so that means somebody's consuming more. And then I think a lot of people will tell themselves, I need this. I need dairy to protect my bones. There's been millions of dollars in marketing for that idea, but what I think people don't realize is that you can get the nutrients to promote bone health from healthier food sources. You can get it where the cow would have liked to have gotten it, from leafy green grass. We can get it from leafy green vegetables as well. And for people who consume the most dairy, research shows that, in fact, they have the worst bone health. And I think there's something to that, but you're not going to hear a whole lot about that in the marketing campaigns. And as I mentioned, it's dairy products are associated with different forms of cancer, certainly the ones that are hormone-related, like breast and ovarian cancer, prostate cancer for men. And interestingly, it's low-fat dairy that is even more associated with prostate cancer, which suggests it has something more to do with the protein content than the fat content. And there's other ways to get it. Calcium, again, from beans and greens. Vitamin D, which doesn't naturally occur in dairy. It's added to dairy, like vitamin A is added to dairy. You can get that from other sources, and ideally from the sun, which would be the best source for vitamin D, and has been proven to be even more supportive of bone health to focus on vitamin D. So those are kind of my, you know, mythbusters and reality checks when it comes to dairy products.
Well, those are very wise and all scientifically backed. Thank you very much, Susan Levin, for coming on and sharing these insights with us.
Thank you.
Susan Levin is the Director of Nutrition Education at Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, Washington, D.C. Now let's go to some of the commentaries and environmental issues. Then I'm going to open it up for TalkBack, that part of the program where you have a chance to call in and share your points of view. Our number on TalkBack is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Some extreme weather in the last few days. Yesterday, there was an 8.5 earthquake out near Russia and Japan. 8.5. Not a word in the news about it. The day before, there was one that was in the middle of the Pacific near some islands, but it was up there over a 7. More and more, the Pacific Rim is showing this activity. This is from Echo Watch. From California to Wisconsin, record-breaking wildfire seasons in place. Quote, from Blake Depe, on May 14th, Wisconsin saw its largest wildfire since 1980. Encouraged by strong winds, the blaze burned 8,700 acres, destroying 17 homes and 30 other structures. Meanwhile, in California, another fire that began May 15th has blackened 3,800 acres in Ventura and Kern counties. It would seem that this is the start of yet another year of numerous fires as people throughout the U.S. struggle to adjust to a new normal in terms of natural disasters, an unfortunate result of climate change. And then it goes on to talk about how many different places are having exceptional fires, and it gives a map. Now, you look at this map, and you start seeing that there's high levels of fire in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Northern Florida, and Alabama. In West Texas, Southern Texas, it's not in Eastern Texas, but then you got to go real bad fire in at least half of California, all of Nevada, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Wyoming, South Dakota, Kansas, Indiana, Iowa, and Utah, all in big-time fire. And by the way, just the last month, California spent over $221 million fighting fires. They had 50 planes and helicopters that belonged to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, most of which normally sit on the airfield this time of year. Not now. It's all happening quicker. This just in today, heat-related deaths in Manhattan projected to rise. From Tara Daly, quote, residents of Manhattan will not just sweat harder from rising temperatures in the future, says a new study. Many may die. Researchers say deaths linked to warming climate may rise 20% in the next 6 years. And some worst-case scenarios, it'll go much higher. So why? Because there's so much concrete, and when it gets hot, it holds in the heat. Also, from Common Dreams, Andrea Germanos, UN warns of world without water. Quote, the world is on track to run out of water, so says UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He issued the message on the International Day of the Biological Diversity and on specifically water and biodiversity. Quote, although seemingly abundant, Only a tiny amount of the water on our planet is easily available as fresh water. We live in an increasingly water-insecure world where demand often outstrips supply and where water quality often fails to meet minimum standards. Under current trends, future demands for water will not be met. Let me repeat that. Under current trends, future demands for water will not be met. End quote. Well, we know that there's almost 2 billion people, about one-third the world's population, living in areas with absolute water scarcity, and another two-thirds of the world's population are living under water stress conditions. And we're losing biodiversity in our ecosystems, and that provides water. You tear down a rainforest where water from precipitation rises into the atmosphere and then is carried as clouds, you no longer have those precipitate clouds. Hence, you're causing a shift in water. So, all bad on water. That's why when I was looking for the homestead, one of the very first things I looked for was perpetual water. Where do we have it? Where is it? And what is the likelihood it's going to be there? Is it clean? People don't think about this. And yet, there are currently half of all the states in the United States are in permanent drought. It's not going to get better. And yet we're not willing to be honest about any of this. The media doesn't cover it. Politicians won't discuss it. I saw a phenomenally interesting short half-hour documentary, 28-minute documentary, which I'll play next week, about what really happened in Compton, California. Up to that point last year, it was the largest city in the United States to go bankrupt. Now it's Detroit. And there are a whole lot more that are going to go, how that actually happened. And through this documentary, very well done, you'll see that no one wanted to be honest about its future and its non-sustainability. And I'm suggesting that the very thing, same thing is happening in California, New York State with its hydrofracking and its nuclear. All it takes is one major disaster, and no matter how long people live there, no matter how pure and pristine the environment, it's spoiled forever. And yet we're rushing madly to find any source of fossil fuel, oil, gas, hydrofracking, or in other cases nuclear, without concern about the consequences. And now the consequences have to be concerned. Now from Tara Lohan from Alternet, four examples from the last week proving President Obama is, quote, full of hot air on climate protection. I'll quote this. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. The Earth hit the 400 parts per million C carbon dioxide threshold for the first time in human history. Scientists tell us this is bad news if we want to prevent runaway climate change. Quote, if we continue to burn fossil fuels at accelerating rates, if we continue with business as usual, we will cross the 450 parts per million limit in a matter of maybe a couple of decades, says Michael Mann, a scientist. We believe that with that amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, we commit to what can truly be described as dangerous and irreversible changes in our climate. End quote. Well, if you didn't know this already, we should be listening to Mann and other scientists. I thought this was settled long ago, but someone keeps giving print space to climate deniers. So a new survey of 12,000 peer-reviewed studies on the climate was just completed, and the not-so-shocking conclusion was this. As Mother Nature Network reports, quote, published this week in the journal Environmental Research Letters, the analysis shows an overwhelming majority of climate scientists agree that humans are a key contributor to climate change, while a vanishingly small proportion defy this consensus. In light of this news, it makes it even more infuriating to see that Obama administration has spent the week prostrating to the fossil fuel lobby. Here are four disturbing things the administration's been up to. Monique Hart's fracking. Obama tapped nuclear physicist Ernest Monique to head the Energy Department, and the Senate gave a big thumbs up to Monique on Thursday. Environmental groups had concerns that Minutes was too pro-fracking, and those concerns are clearly warranted. Minutes' first order of business was to clear the way for 20 years of liquefied natural gas exports from Quintana Island, Texas. Of course, we've already been sold the story that we're supposed to frack the crap out of the country in the name of energy security, but we knew all along it was the industry profit, right? Brad Jacobson recently detailed for Aldernet about how Congress members are clamoring for export plans to be fast-tracked, although what Americans will get out of the deal will be higher gas prices and less energy security. Number two, thanks for nothing, Sally. While the nomination of Monitz disappointed many environmentalists, some were cheered by REI exec Sally Jewell taking over the Interior Department. Those same folks might not be cheering after Jewell's announcement the Bureau of Land Management's newest regulations for fracking on our public lands. Sierra Club's Michael Brune reported Friday, quote, the new rules are disappointing for many reasons. Drillers won't be required to disclose what chemicals they're using. There is no requirement for baseline water testing, and there are no setback requirements to govern how close to homes and schools drilling can happen. Once again, though, the policy documents an even bigger failure to grasp a fundamental principle. If you're serious about the climate crisis, then the last thing we should be doing is opening up still more federal land to drilling and fracking for fossil fuels. Number three, no time for farmers. The group Bold Nebraska reported this week that Obama turned down an invitation to hear from Nebraska farmers and ranchers about their concerns that the Keystone Pipeline could destroy their livelihood. Of course, the president is a busy guy, right? And besides, the White House said he was not, quote, taking any meetings on the pipeline. Or is he? The group writes, quote, Bold Nebraska was therefore surprised the president's meeting with staff at Ellicott Dredges, a company that just testified in Congress in support of the Keystone Pipeline and makes equipment that creates the tailings ponds, which are massive bodies of polluted water and a byproduct of the tar sands mining process. Quote, I simply do not understand why President Obama can find the time to visit a company that helps hold 12 million liters of toxic tar sand water, but cannot find the time to visit ranchers who put over 12 billion of Nebraska-grown food on Americans' dinner tables every year, says Meghan Hammond, a young farmer whose family land is at risk with the current route. And finally, who needs the Arctic? Well, Banerjee, a photographer and longtime Arctic activist, who recently was appalled by a new report from the Obama administration on the future of the Arctic, and the rest of us should be too. He, quote, our pioneering spirit is naturally drawn to this region for the economic opportunities it presents. That's what President Obama had to say about his excitement for oil and gas drilling in the Arctic Ocean, by carefully choosing the euphemism economic opportunities. In page 7, the true intent of the report is finally revealed. Quote, the region holds sizable, proven, and potential oil and natural gas resources that will likely continue to provide valuable supplies to meet U.S. energy needs. End quote. Of course, the report mentions protecting the environment but gives no specific details. We know that Obama talks a good talk about climate protection, but his second term has proven thus far that he's completely out of touch with reality. You can't hit 400 parts per million of CO2 and still think all of the above is a rational energy strategy. End quote. And finally, good news, anti-fluoride victory in Portland. No fluoride wins, 60-40 in Portland. And I'm happy about that. And if any of you would like the scientific basis to present of how you can stop fluoridation in your area, just go to GaryNall.com and look at the article on the fluoride fiasco, and it has everything you need to make an argument for getting rid of fluoride. Now let's see who we have on the line, and let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Two quick things for you. One is one of your listeners sent me an email from, he lives in Washington State, and apparently one of their main bridges collapsed, sending cars and people into the water. And he said, as I saw this on the news, I heard Gary in my mind talking about how infrastructure of major cities are crumbling because of the budget cuts that everyone's making and the lack of maintenance of them. And of course, you know, once again, he said, boy, if anyone listened to Gary 5 years ago, he said this was going to happen. And sure enough, it's here it is right in my own backyard. Secondly, I have, we get a lot of emails from new college graduates, Gary, who are pretty much clamoring the same message. This comes from Sarah. She says, I'm a recent college graduate with a master's in clinical nutrition. In the last 16 months, I've not been able to find work, except on a few occasions to waitress or work for a minimum wage in like a health food store or something. She says, now I'm walking dogs for $8 an hour. She said, I have $78,000 in college loans, though. I'm living back with my mom, which is not good, as she and I are on opposite sides of every issue, and it's really not a warm and inviting environment to wake up to. She says, of all the friends that I made in college and graduate school, at least 50% are not working, or they also are working for minimum wage like me. And those who are working aren't working at their optimal level in their field. Especially my high-tech friends, all of whom are very bright and did well in college, are finding their jobs have been taken by highly skilled and highly motivated employees coming from India and South Korea and Russia on visas. I heard you speak about this about 2 years ago, and I wouldn't have believed it unless I saw it myself, and now I'm seeing that this is exactly what you were speaking about. You were absolutely right. So she asks, what solution do you have for the millions of new graduates completely overwhelmed by debt?
It's relatively simple. First, understand how pervasive it is. It's over $1 trillion. The average graduate today, with just a baccalaureate, is $35,000 in debt. And then we put them into the job market, where almost always they can't find the quality job, even in their area of expertise. Only 30% of students are graduating from four-year colleges debt-free. 70% of students in the United States are graduating with about $35,000 in debt. Now, you have to understand that they're paying interest, and the interest just doubled. So what is the answer? There is only one answer, one simple answer. Have the Federal Reserve, mandated by the President and Congress, to pay the banks the principal, forgive all interest, and take 33 cents out of every dollar on a student loan that is given through the government's programs, and forgive that 33% because that's the government's profit. And that way, you're looking at about somewhere in the neighborhood of a $700 billion total economic bill, pay it all.
Wow.
Now, if you pay it all, that is less than what we gave to Goldman Sachs, less than what we gave to 22 banks, and then all of our students can start life unencumbered by debt. The companies, including the government, will get their money on principle, so they will have lost nothing. So you're creating nothing more than what was given to all the major corporations, foreign banks, foreign corporations, hedge funds. You're giving them a get-out-of-jail-free pass. We did it for all the corporations. We didn't even get good collateral. We got junk in return. So that's what I would do. This would be the first time this would be done, but at least it would establish that in this terrible economy for so many people, you're giving them a break. We gave everyone else a break. Why is it that the Republicans, why is it the conservatives, why is it the corporate Democrats don't want to give a student who is struggling a break but had no problem giving AIG and Chrysler and GE, not Chrysler, but GE, and others a break? They gave Bank of America $2 trillion. $2 trillion. One bank. They gave Citigroup over $1.6 trillion. They gave $20 trillion. And I'm suggesting $700 billion. So I'm suggesting a tiny fraction. Let the Fed print money, let us start a whole generation without debt, and that would be a big benefit to the student and to their family. That's how I would approach it. Okay?
Common sense.
We're out of time. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for taking your time to listen. Coming up in a moment, Utrice Lee, but let me explain, over the weekend I will be doing my talkback show on Sunday evening. Hope you all have a nice holiday. I'm out on the road filming. On Monday, on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 p.m., Dr. Mario Martinez. He is a really interesting person. Conversations with a Remarkable Mind, just he and I for the hour, on biocognitive intuition. I'm going to ask him about the stigmatas and healing and diseasing. Then also, I'll be continuing with another neuroscientist, Dr. Robert Burton, about the mind and how little we actually know about it. Then I'll have next week also Linda Tucker, a major conservationist from South Africa who works with the endangered white lions. And her work has been compared to the environmental efforts of Jane Goodall working with chimpanzees. And then we're going to take an in-depth look at China, because I believe that the future of the United States and our economy in the world is in no small measure based upon what China is doing, right and wrong. They're doing both. And then we'll finish off the week with Dr. Omar Manajawa on addictions and why we have so many addicted people. Have a nice day, everyone.
A man to do, oh baby. I'll sacrifice.